The following recording offers you a number of different options for the Daf Yomi. It begins with a recording of this, the 13th cycle's Daf Yomi, and that's done rather rapidly, within a half an hour or less. That's followed by a quick review between 5 and 10 minutes, depending on the length of the Daf. After that comes the very same Daf from the previous cycle, done at greater length in much greater detail, with different participants in a different ambience. You could choose one for your original learning, one for review, alternate, or whatever you do, enjoy. Today's Daf brought to you, Ben Chomot Yerushalayim in Masechet Shabbat is Daf Gimel. And we already began the Daf yesterday, but we'll restart from the two dots on Amud Beit. Omar Leirin Matan Labaya, 3 lines up from the bottom. The Mishnah, if you will recall, listed 16 different cases because of the variables that we needed to take into consideration. So we had the question of the Rishuyot, is Rishut Rabim, Rishut Hayachid, question of where the individual is standing who's doing a particular movement, whether he's standing Bachutz, we call him the Ani, just as a matter of convention, or he's standing Bifnim, we call him the Balabayit. There is the question whether the motion that's involved in doing either the act of Hotzah, which is taking out from Rishut Hayachid into Rishut Rabim, or the act of Hachanasah, which is going from Rishut Rabim to Rishut Hayachid, is a motion that draws towards himself or whether it pushes it away from himself. And we needed to take into consideration whether the individual was active or passive, and whether he completed the entire malacha or didn't complete the entire malacha. The Mishnah, in order to raise all of these issues, among others, specifically confuses us by listing 16 different issues and leaving it very unclear in the last section, which is the latter 8, exactly what it's referring to when it says there are 4 cases in those 8 cases, because there's clearly 8 cases. So therefore, the Gemara, Rav Matna, originally, Omele, Rav Matna Labaye, how does the Mishnah say Shnayim Shein Arba and Shnayim Shein Arba when it's really 16 cases and you're only saying 4 plus 4, which is equals 8? Hatamani Havi. Aren't they, now his question was, aren't there 12 cases? And of course, the reason that he said 12 cases, we're going to make it clear in a second, which is what Abaye said to him, now why did you have to pick out 12? You yourself are obviously already filtering the Mishnah, so you're parsing it in a unique way. Why didn't you say 16? Because it's clear to me why 4 of the cases the Tana is not bothering with. And those 4 cases are the cases where one of the partners in the act was completely and totally passive, and for all intents and purposes, didn't even have to be there. So that in the first cases that are listed, which are the first two sets of cases, the Balabayit, well, actually, we start with the Ani and then the Balabayit. Over there, the other person simply stood stock still like a shelf. And something happened to be on his hand. He could have been asleep or he could have been dead, for that matter. So he is irrelevant. I understand. And therefore, Bava Deresha, where it says he's Potter. I mean, but come on, it could mean that he's Potter. I mean, he's not doing anything. Potter usually means you did something wrong, but nonetheless, you don't have to be chayev for it. But Obinovi, you didn't do anything. So he would be Mutter. I understand that the Tana does not expect us to take that as one of the cases we need to bother with. Lokatani, fine. But I do not understand the last two cases, which are in the Seifa, where over there, both partners were active. And the Shorish of the Din, that this represents the expansion of the Shnayim for each of them, the Shehin Arba, both for the Oni and for the Baal Abayit, I don't understand why it's Shehin Arba. It's really Sheish, because for each one of them, because ultimately, what are the cases? The cases are either that the Oni was originally holding something in his hand and inserts it inside, but he doesn't put it down, the Baal Abayit takes it from him. Or the Oni puts his hand in empty, leaves his hand, and the Baal Abayit puts something in his hand, and then the Oni takes it out. So, okay, in those cases, and vice versa, for the case where the Baal Abayit was the one who stuck out his hand. I mean, I don't understand. In each one of those cases, there's two partners. In each one of those cases, I should say that it doesn't mean you're mutter, because obviously you're doing something wrong. If you remove the chayfetz that had been brought into your rishus from another rishus, you're just not going to be chayav achatas or chayav skilah if you do this b'mezid. So how did you exactly decide which are the 4 cases? There are 8 cases there, in which case, in total, we have 12 cases. So explain that to me. So there, Kasha, I have a problem where it's Patur Aval Asur. Now, we are about to just embark in a parenthetical issue, which is, hold on a second over there, says the Gemara. Did you say that the above of the Reisha said Potter, but it really meant Mutter? But how is that possible? Isn't there a general rule that anywhere now, we find the word Potter in Masechet Shabbat, it always means that there's an Issur D'Rabban, by definition. If there's no Issur D'Rabban, we call it Mutter. And therefore, I first need to understand what you're saying. I mean, I understand the principle. You certainly seem to be right. He's passive. But how does that fit with the language? I don't understand. Mi'ika b'kulei Shabbat patur umutar. Is there such a thing as patur and mutar? Doesn't Shmuel point out that in the entire Masechet, kol patur de Shabbat, wherever that word patur in Masechet Shabbat occurs, It always means it's potter, but you're not allowed to do it minarabbanan, except for three special cases, which we could see why they're special. Bar mihani tlat, and these are the following three cases, which is not only potter, but it's also actually mutar. And those cases are the tzedat tzvi, the tzedat nachash, and mefis mursan. And we're going to see what exactly the issue is over there. And just briefly, the tzedat tzvi is talking about in a case where someone sits down next to someone else who is sitting down at the doorway of his house, and there is an animal inside. Now, when the second person sits down, he has not actually closed the animal inside to be in any way tzad. When the first guy gets up and the second guy remains in the doorway, the animal remains enclosed in the house. So no new event has taken place, and therefore, even though we say patur, it should be mutar. Furthermore, there's also a problem of opening up a blister that you have on Shabbos. And there's normally an isser to bake a doorway in something, and that extends to things like opening up blisters, except that over here, since it's part of what's necessary in order to allow the pus to escape, they didn't aser it, min rabbanan. And there's the case of tzedat nachash. Now, normally tzedah refers by definition to an act where you capture something that you want. That's what the malacha is. To capture something in order to prevent it from biting you is not an act of tzedah. I don't want the snake. I just want to get the snake out of here. It's sort of, you know, may God bless and keep the Pope far away from us. And that's exactly it. You know, keep it. But I don't want to keep it. I want to keep it away. Now, that's not really an act of tzedah. That's called a malacha that is not being done for its own good, for its own purpose. We'll talk more about this later on. But in any event, over there, they didn't aser it, even though normally it would be aser ben rabbanan, because they didn't want to aser preventing people from getting hurt by snakes, of course. But those were three cases. Apparently, there's no other case. You're claiming that the first Mishnah in Shabbat talks about two cases, well, actually four cases, which is really mutter. You're calling it potter for the Oni and for the Balabayit. So how do you explain that? Oh, please, hold on a second. I'm saying it's potter mutter because you didn't do anything. You don't even have to be awake. We're not talking about doing something over there. But peturi delokov in maase, I mean, well, you didn't do anything. When we use the word potter, and it's evident that the man hasn't done an act at all, there's many examples of that in Masechet Shabbat, ikatuva. Now, this is a problem because of the tzedat tzvi, but seems to be also you're not doing anything. It's completely passive. We'll discuss it when we get to the sugya later on. But in any event, can we get back to the main question? I appreciate your semantics, but please, mikomakom, please answer my question. There are tartes rehav, and there's 12 cases, and you're claiming that there's only 8 cases, and I don't understand how it is that we're supposed to determine which of the cases we're referring to. Well, that's also understandable, he says to him, because Turi da'atube lidechiyuv chatat kachashiv. Da'atube lidechiyuv chatat lo kachashiv. We are talking about peturim. Yeah, it's true. They both did something they shouldn't have done. But cases that I can distinguish between 4 cases of chiyuv, 4 cases where you're potter, but you could have been chayiv. That's what I'm talking about. 4 cases where you did an iser, which is not part of any possibility of doing a hotzah. I'm not talking about those cases, Bichlal. Now, this itself, of course, in classic fashion in the Mishnah, is still up in the air, because we don't know what it is that we mean, da'ati b'lidechi of chatat. So one simple way of reading it is that the only cases that we would talk about is someone who began with the akira. And if he did the Akira, he might just go ahead and complete the whole thing. And once you do the Akira, it's possible to complete the Malacha. But if anybody else was involved in the Akira, then by definition, you'll never be able to be Chayav Akiyav Chattas, because, again, the act of Otzah means you had to have done an Akira before the removal of the object. So that would be the first thing that would strike you. That makes a lot of sense, except for one problem. The Akirot, 2 of the Akirot that we're talking about, is essentially, let's say, the Balabai picks up a piece of bread from the table and takes it into the hand of the Ani. I mean, you're saying that would be the case. That's the Akira, because if he didn't put it in the hand of the Ani, instead he stuck it into the other Rishos. Man, for heaven's sakes, but what did he do? He took a piece of bread and he put it on a table for all intents and purposes. I mean, he put it on a shelf. You're calling that an Akira that's Ati Ruli Dechi of Chatat, where the guy hasn't even really begun doing anything at all. That was a Malacha. As Tosfos says, I mean, what is that? That's Tiltul Ba'alma. He's moving something. What in the world gives it the characteristic of a Hotza'ah until the Ani actually removes it? It's difficult to believe that we would call that act the thing which may come lidei chiyuv chatat. Okay, but again, you can understand the possibilities. The Rivah's own approach was the other way that we parsed the Mishnah on our own. We were thinking, well, what might it mean? which cases. So once again, certainly from a psychological level, and some of the Achronim suggest that the Rivaz approach is more than psychological, it's actually his a different definition of Hotzah. But at least from a psychological point of view, the actual movement of a Chefetz from one spatial area to another type of space, even though it does not as yet have coordinates in that space, we do not consider something that is moving and isn't at rest, have been defined with spatial coordinates, because they're always essentially vectors, and we don't talk about vectors on Shabbos, talk about changes that are permanent, at least for this instant. And because of that, it must be that the Riva holds, I mean, maybe, at least some claim it must be, but it's a possibility that the Riva holds that nonetheless the main idea of Hotzah is the moment of change. So that the Hanacha, yes, is necessary because the change doesn't come implanted. The Hanacha, the Akira, is necessary because if not, then there's nothing to define this change as having changed something meaningful because there was no Akira to it. But really, that is what we mean by Hotzah. Certainly from a psychological point of view, when Mommy tells you, we don't carry on Shabbat, she doesn't know anything about Akira's Hanacha, she knows you're not supposed to have something when you're moving. Okay, so then if that's the case, we would talk about the four cases which are the one who's moving it across the threshold, whether that is done in terms of I put in my hand empty and now I'm taking it out full, or I put in my hand full, or vice versa. We're talking about the balabai. That's not what's important. But that's the thing that is most like the act of a hotzah. Another approach is that we're talking about specifically the one, and this is Rashi's Rabbeim, he said, told him this shot, we're talking about the one who moved his hand across, whether it's full of something or it's not full of something. Because we're not talking about the chayfetz. We're talking about someone who went to get something, or who actually moved something. Difficult, but once again, that's clearly psychological. I mean, you want to talk to me because I'm the one who really took the responsibility for putting my hand in there and somebody else maybe, hopefully, will put some money in it, you know, or bread in it if it's Shabbos. You know? So, okay, that's a little bit of a stretch. That's another possibility. A fourth possibility is, according to some, that we only list the people who do not the Akiras, but Dafke the Hanachot, because since the Melacha is completed by them, so they are the ones that are closest to doing the act of, it just happens to be that they'll never complete the Dechi of Chavis practically, but next time maybe they will. So therefore, the Gezerah of completing the setting down of an object in a different Rishos and giving it new special coordinates, that's what we would be most makpid on, even though obviously both would be involved.
That's the point of
that's the four that we're counting.
Change actually takes place.
No, you could say that the Hotzah as change takes place. Yeah. Now, by the way, the use, which appears to be somewhat arbitrary, in this particular case of the passivity, of the four cases of passive cases that we're ignoring, and saying patur instead of mutar, is because even though it's patur, it's only patur, even though it's mutar rather, it's only mutar in terms of Shabbat. But I mean, in terms of the questions that are involved, perhaps of lifnei iver, of allowing a guy to maybe the only way that the person would be able to accomplish this act of hotzah, rachmasa, is because my hand is there available for him. If I'm making that hand available for him in such circumstances, I'm over on a different issur. I could be over on a dioraita if neiver lo titen birshol, or even if it's not a unique case, that's called technically trei avri dinar, where it's only because of my sticking my hand across the river that he's able to get, the nazir is able to get his grapes to eat, so to speak. We're talking about lifneiver in that case. But even if it isn't a technical case of trei avri dinar, it's still participating as a passive participant in someone who's doing an issur dioraita. You know, what are you? You're like, it's fine with you, people being Michal Shabbos. You look like, yeah, sure, go right ahead. So even though I can't call that an isser of Shabbos, but I can call it an isser of encouraging Ovrei Aveira, which is called Nisayea Lidei Ovrei Aveira. What? I don't want to use the word mutar. When I say mutar, people will think in total context, mutar, and it isn't mutar in context of what's going on. Technically, in terms of Shabbat, you're right, it's mutar, and therefore we're not going to count it as another four cases in the Mishnah. So we've now successfully, even though we're not quite sure how, but we successfully have whittled down the Mishnah from 16 cases to 12 cases to 8 cases. And in Shavuot, we whittled it down yet further to 4 cases, because we were talking about only cases of Chiyuva, as we came out. Yes, the Gemara, but, okay, I understand, but why is the fact that the Malacha was achieved by 2 people, why does that necessarily mean that no one is Potter? Why isn't it sort of just like a Shuddha foot in the Malacha? So we did it together. Can't 2 people do a Malacha together on Shabbat and be Chayev? Now, obviously, there's 2 ways that that could happen. One way would be, we've got a cabinet that weighs 200 pounds, and I can't lift it myself. So a friend comes and helps me pick up the cabinet. Together we do the Akira, move it, and together we do the Hanacha. So over there, we're all doing the entire Malacha, and I couldn't have done it myself. That's one way of two people doing a Malacha. Where over there, it's clear that everyone was involved in the entirety of the Malacha. But even in this case, where the Malacha is achieved only through the partial involvement, at one stage one person, and at another stage of another person, who's to say that that's just not another way of doing a malacha together? And so, ha'it avida malacha bibeinayu. Has a malacha not been achieved between the two of them? How are we so certain that that is not called Chilul Shabbat for all and sundry? Now, that's Rashi's approach. Tosis's approach is, why is the one who completes the malacha? Why is he not chayav? So you can have cases where somebody will, you know, turn on the fire on the oven and get everything ready, and you're the one who puts the water in the pot. So, I mean, so you're the one who cooked the water. That's the point. So, I mean, over here, so the last one who does it, he's the one that completes, just as we were saying before, completes, but maybe that's the malacha. The fact that it needed other people to do the Akira is sort of like a condition, but why is this not considered to be the malacha now at this point that is finished by me? Tanya, Rebbe Omer, there's a braita in which Rebbe darshens the pasuk. It says in the Torah, Me'am Ha'aretz, so they're talking about the dinam of Chatat, Nefesh Echat Techete Bishkaga, Me'am Ha'aretz Ba'asota Achat Mi'mitzvot Hashem. What is that, Ba'asota? Ba'asota means in its entirety. That's why we're using that mapike. Take the thing that it's doing, the malacha. If that entire malacha is done by that nefesh, Ose et kula, V'lo ose et miktzata. Furthermore, some say that not furthermore, because this just is repetitious and therefore doesn't shouldn't even be here. So yachid v'asaota chayav, shnayim v'asuota piturim. Now there is a possibility, we're going to see much more of this later, that actually this is a furthermore in the sense that this piece may be discussing two people who do a malacha together where I don't need your help. So I say to someone, all right, I don't want to do the moving the newspaper from outside of the house, inside of the house by myself. That would be a malacha on Shabbos. Why don't you give me a hand? Here, you lift up half the newspaper, and I'll hold the other half, and we'll carry it in together and set it down. And then we'll all be putter, because at least I get to read my newspaper comfortably with my coffee on Shabbos. Because, I mean, I understand if we're going to do a cabinet together, then each one of us is doing everything they can do for the malacha. But here, so indeed, the pasuk is saying, only one person is going to be chayav on the malacha, not two partners. Itmanam yom rebchir bar gamda nizreka mipicha bura v'yamru be'asota yachid she'asa achayav shnayim she'asa'ua piturim. We also have, this is a very strange thing, to have an itmar nami, which is a raya to a braita, because generally itmar nami is a reference to amoraim. We don't bring rayas from amoraim to braita. So Tosi suggests maybe the chabura that we're referring to here was a chaburat tanaim. Or perhaps the braita that was said before, Tanya, Rebbe, Omer, was not a braita that was officially passed upon by Rav Moshe Reb Chiya, and therefore it's not really a 100% reliable braita. If we want to know how to apply it, we would need to have further proof. And the fact is that the Nizraka Mipichabura is always something that is uniquely valuable, because Nizraka Mipichabura means that it emerged, as opposed to someone taking responsibility for that statement on a personal level. And emergent things, as we saw before in Brachot, there's even a tzad to say that an emergent dea can represent a third party for purposes of Zimun, or can represent an additional party, because it's no one in the Chabura, there's something that came out of the Chabura. So here too, something that comes out in which it emerges from the totality of all of the minds that are involved is more than the statement of an Amora, even if all of them have to be Amoraim, which would be another remarkable expression of the power of emergence. Boy mine rav mi rebbe. So now to take the questions that we had a little bit further. When we start thinking about what's going on, what we had in the Mishnah was a case where someone puts in an empty hand into another Rishus. An individual in that Rishus puts something into his hand. He then pulls it back, and he's potter. Is the reason that he's potter, is that because of the fact that someone else did it? Or is it because of the fact that the akira of my hand was meaningless? But what would I care if somebody else did it? Let's say I was standing in another Rishus, and somebody puts a backpack on me, and I walk out. So I say, okay, well, the Mishnah says, if the balabayit is the one who put it on you, then you're potter. Or is that only because it was my hand? Of course, if it's only because it was my hand, that raises some serious issues. So what is my hand? I mean, why is my hand good enough to serve as a base for hanacha if somebody puts something on it, but it's not good enough to serve as a base of akira if somebody else puts something on it when it's standing into the other rishut? So the way to open up this issue is, first, let's decide, what is the deal if someone else does the technical akira, lifting up the backpack from the ground, putting it on my back, and I walk out? What's the din there? So Rav asks Rebbe, Hitinok Havero Oklin Omash. Because if somebody gives him something to carry out with him, obviously Oklin Omash is just a typical case where before a guy leaves your house, you know, you give him a bottle of water, have something to drink. And he walks out with it. Now what's the din over there? Is Akirat Gufo Kakirat Chefetz Bimekomo Dami? Do we say that the water that's in his pocket or the backpack, that is considered to be already Akur because the Balabai put it on his back? Or is my act of walking out, okay, it along with me into the other Rishut? That's a new act of Akira. We don't care about what it is, how it got on my back. That's irrelevant. And therefore, it would be Chayiv. Or Dilma Lo. Maybe it's no different than the case in the Mishnah, in which since someone else did the Akira from the ground and put it on me, and over there, when I take my hand out, I'm Pater. Maybe if I take my body out, I'm also Pater. Or Marley, no similarity, sir. You are Chayiv ve'eno dome liyado. It is not similar to your hand. So I know what you're asking me. You want this as a p'ticha to understanding the Mishnah. Don't think it has anything to do with the hand. The case in the hand is because a hand in the other Rishut cannot accomplish an Akira. A body moving from one Rishut to another accomplishes both Akira and Hanach. And the reason for this is my taima. What indeed is the logic behind it, asks the Gemara. The difference is that Yado lo nayach, but Gufo is nayach. Your hand is never considered to be at rest when it's stuck in to a different rishut. It's by definition a vector, because it's not on anything. It's essentially moving, except it happens to be right now that we don't measure its movement, but it isn't in the other rishuts. In fact, if we would look at where it is that the things in your hand are located, they are located more in the place where you are, because we'll just follow your arm down to your legs. It's in that rishut. Of course, if it's really in that rishut, then the moment the balabayit would put it in that rishut on your hand, if it would literally be in that rishut, it ought to be knocked in the other rishut, and then the balabayit achieved a hotzah by putting something into your hand. Now, that didn't happen, so it clearly can't mean that either. All right, so that's going to be our next question. I mean, so how does it serve in different ways? So my timer, look, so yado lo nayach, gufo is nayach. Now there's another girsa here which Rashi says is repetitious. And Tosfos says is essential to understanding the assumptions that the Gemara is making. And that is yado batar gufo grira. Your hand is always going to be drawn to where your body is. It generally has a tendency to keep following you wherever you go. That hand just follows you around.
It's strange how that works.
And because of that, when it's in a different rishus, you cannot really call it permanently in that rishus in any way. And therefore, it doesn't take on the coordinates of that rishus. So relative to the support system, it's not the object, is not in the other rishus. Omar Lay. And the reason it wouldn't apply to a foot is because there's a din of anything within 3 tefachim of Rishut HaYachid, of the ground, in which it's considered to be attached to the ground, as we know from Sukkot, when it's a very important yisod in our sukkah here. But that's a different issue. Actually, Tosfos apparently had a different girsa in Rashi, in which, according to which, this would mean that only where your hand is within 3 tefachim of the ground. Because in his girsa, it was your body is resting on the ground, but your hand isn't resting on the ground, which Tosfos takes to assume in Rashi, which is definitely not true. But Tosfos takes to makes an assumption. That would mean, according to Rashi, that unless you actually had moved something from one rishus to the other, while you keep your hand, has to be within 3 tefachim of the ground, then it would be considered that you didn't remove it from the other rishus. But she says, how is that possible? It brings lots of proofs that that's not the case.
Walking like Groucho Marx.
So meanwhile, Reb Chiya was quite outraged that Rav had asked this question to Rebbe. And the reason he was outraged is because there are rules about asking questions, which today nobody takes seriously. You know, the same way you meet a doctor in the street and it's, Doc, Shalom Aleichem, listen, would you mind looking at the... You know, so first of all, there's Derek Eretz in Yanim. I mean, it's obviously, you know, opportunistic meetings are really disturbing. And that's one problem. The other problem is that that you've got to give someone a chance to give you an answer when his mind is at rest. But another issue is that you've also got to make certain that the person that you're asking is involved in the issue that you're asking about. Because otherwise, it means a complete tearing your mind out of what it is that you're doing, reviewing what it is that this other person is asking you. And it happens to be, said Rabbi Yatarav, you are not supposed to ask from a sugya, and this is even Rabbeinu HaKadosh, I mean, he's the one who wrote the sugyas, for God's sake, but you don't ask him about something that he's not currently involved in. It happens to be that you're learning Masechet Shabbat, and he is not. So I've told you many times, haven't I explained to you that when Rebbe is involved in one Masechet, do not ask him issues from another Masechet? Because, I mean, he just may not be involved in it. And the fact is, either you're going to embarrass him, because he can't give you an immediate answer without reworking it, or he's going to shoot off an answer which, because he's not involved in it, may turn out to be the wrong answer, which is even more embarrassing. So then, it's a good thing that in this case, it worked out all right. Because Dilav the Rebbe Gavar Rabbi, I'm telling you, if Rebbe wouldn't be a giant who had his mind on exactly what you were asking him, you could have embarrassed him. He could have answered you something which would have been a useless answer. It happens to be, as it is, that he gave you precisely the right answer in exactly the right words. Because if you take a look at the following brayta, you will see that it actually addresses your question in exactly the way that Rebbe addressed it. Now, an equivalent case to somebody else putting something on you would be when you put something on you, but not on Shabbos. Here it is, Erev Shabbos. It's the middle of the afternoon, and you're wearing a backpack because you're going out to the store, and you don't take the backpack off, and then you walk out after Shkia, or after Tzedak Kochavim, and you carry the backpack into the other Rishut. Now, it's exactly the same case. If somebody else puts the backpack on you, it's not part of your act of Otzah. And here, too, when you put the backpack on you, it was the middle of the day before Shabbat and had nothing to do with an act of Otzah. However, you then made it an act of Otzah by moving your body. Obviously, talking about that at one point, your body had been at rest, as Tosis points out. It was between the time that you would put it on Erev Shabbat, just as the case of the Baal HaBayit. Your body had to be at rest. Okay, but now you move your body. Is that considered to be an Akir? Do we go back to the original source of the presence of the backpack on your back? If we go back to the original source, then somebody else put it there, or you put it there, Erev Shabbos, it's exactly the same thing. It cannot serve as the Akira for the Chil Shabbat. But if we don't really care how it got there, we only care about the fact that moving your body is itself the Akira of that backpack, then you'll be Chayiv. And the Braita continues on that if afterwards, Mishech HaShecha, you were Hotzian Lachutz, Mishech HaShecha, you're Chayiv. And it even uses the word that Rebbe used, Lefi She'eno Domeh LiYado. It's not to be compared to the case in the Mishnah of Yado. You could see how much the Mishnah serves as a paradigm for, because anytime that anybody was thinking something, they were basing it on the implications of the weird cases that were given in the Mishnah, analyzing what is really the consequences of those cases. What implications do they have? And therefore, the question clearly, you immediately understand if you're learning the Masechet, if somebody brought this up to you, I know what he's thinking. And therefore you say, Ein Adam Eliyado. Amar Abaya, okay, so now let's take the next step. So what is a hand, basically, that's hanging in a different Rishos? So it's clear to me that a hand that's extended into Rishos that is different than the body that it's connected to is obviously not a Rishot HaRabim, and it's obviously not a Rishot HaYachid. It's not a Rishot HaRabim. I know that from the case of the hand of the Ani, because it says if the Baal HaBayit takes something out of that, he's Potter. Why would it be Potter? If we take a look at that hand as being a Rishot HaRabim because it's attached to the Ani in the other Rishot, or because a hand that is just hanging nowhere is a Rishot HaRabim, so then the Baal HaBayit would be Chayiv. But he's not Chayiv. So forget that. I know that it can't be Rishot HaYachid. I know that from the fact of the Yad of the Baal HaBayit. It says if the Ani takes something out of the Yad of the Baal HaBayit, which is attached to his body and the other Rishot HaYachid. So whether I look at that or whether I look at the hand as a separate entity, it's clearly not an entity that's Rishot HaYachid. What is it? Why Abaya? Normally, I understand that, and here it's time to recognize, we said we're going to talk about it a little bit later, now's the later. There are two Rishriyot that we spoke of, which was the comment, Rishriyot Shabbat Shtayim. But the Shtayim Shehin Arba is true about Rishriyot Shabbat as well. Because the idea of a Rishut is a properly constituted space. That doesn't mean that every place is a space. There are places that do not warrant coordinates. So a non-space is called a Mokom Ptur. It's not a Rishut. It's not a Rishut. It's because it's not a Rishut that it's a Mokom Ptur. It is not in a delineated area. So it's not surrounded by Mechitzot. or it's not surrounded by mechitzot and include an area that has some type of value. All of the details of what a Makom Patur is, we'll talk about later. Or it's in midair, above the Reshut HaRabim, and Reshut HaRabim is by definition not surrounded by mechitzot, and therefore the airspace is not included within the Reshut, unless it's the usable airspace, which is always called the Asarat Fachin. So all of those things, those are what you call a Makom Patur. We have a Derabbanan concept of Rishut, and that is a Karmelit. Now a Karmelit is a semi-Rishut. In other words, it has certain elements of it that give it the Chashivut of it, a delineated Rishut. And because of that, the Rabbanan were gozer on it that it should serve as a Rishut HaYachid, and you're not allowed to move from it into Rishut HaRabim. We'll see, there's even different types of Karmelits. But my question is, assuming that the Rabbanan constituted the hand, because a hand is pretty much the best possible way for something to be munah. I mean, that's what a hand is for. In other words, it grasps, it contains, and it's very, very much part of your conscious connection to an object. So the question is, do we totally ignore the hand as a presence, and therefore the object is in nowhere land, so it's an unwelcome tour? Or do we say that the Rabbanan give a hand the name, at least, of a Karmelit? Now, if they did, then we have an additional complication over here, because if they give it a din of a Karmelit, suppose you had something in your hand that's hanging over into the other Rishut. Could you bring it back? Or do you have to leave it there? Because then it will be in the Rishut that you're taking it out of the Karmelit into. So what would be the halacha over there? So it has some dinim of Rishut HaRabim, some dinim of Rishut HaYachid. The word Karmelit itself means a forest, or a woody area, or a wilderness area. That's called Karmelo Yaro. The Karmelo is a posse. So okay, it's a place where things are growing. So it's not really used all the time, the way we saw that we use the Midbar as our model. So the question is whether we should view it as a Rishut HaRabim, or we view it, since it's not a Rishut HaRabim, and it has other things in it, trees that would prevent it, maybe it's Rishut HaYachid, or is it a semi-Rishut, neither Rishut HaYachid, Rishut HaRabim? And the reason I'm asking this, says Abaye, is because I want to know, Mikan Tzua Rabbanan Lahadurika Be'olo. Once you stuck out that hand, did the Rabbanan say, well, yeah, now you shouldn't have done that, young man, because now the Chafetz is in a different Rishut. So you'll say, okay, but it isn't really in that Rishus yet, because I didn't deposit it in that Rishus, and the Balabayat, or the Ani, as the case may be, has it taken out of my hand, so I'll just take it back. Thank you. Oh, no, you don't.
Which way?
Actually, you're stuck, because that hand is a Karmelit. So did they Aser the person, because he did an Iser here, did they Aser him from bringing it in, or not? Now, that would be Mikansua, which would mean that it's specifically because he did something wrong. Tosfos says it seems more correct in the Girsa here to have Miasrua. Did the Rabbanan give the hand a din of a Karmelit? Not because of a Knas, because later on we're going to get into the issue of Knas, as we'll see. Since you did something wrong, we're not letting you bring that hand back in. It has nothing to do with how to define a hand. It's done. Okay, you stuck your hand out. Leave it out. Have fun. So, okay, Tosfos himself acknowledges that it's possible the whole idea of turning a hand into a Rishus is strange, and therefore it would need to be a Knas because of these situations in the first place. Maybe that's what the Gemara means. So Toshma says the Gemara to Abaya, let's take a look at the following brayta. We've got two brayta. His hand is full of perot, he sticks it out of the window. Now, one brayta says, Tanachada asur lachzira, and Tanachada mutar lachzira. So apparently, there is a machloket over here about whether your hand becomes a Karmelit. So Mar Sova, once it extends into a different Rishus, it now has its own name. And it's Karmelit Damya, Mar Sova lafka Karmelit Damya, right? There's your answer wrong. It may well be the Kuleyama Karmelit Damya. Who says that they're arguing about it? Anything. It's talking about you stuck your hand out of the window. Okay, fine. If you stuck your hand out of the window into the Rishut HaRabim, were you on the first floor or the second floor? If you're on the first floor, then essentially you put your hand into Rishut HaRabim area. And at that point, we're going to treat it like a Karmelit, because it's somewhere and it shouldn't have been there. But if you stuck your hand out of the second story window, anyway, it's nowhere. There was no iser in sticking something out of a second story window, because it's an Makom Patur. So why would the Rabbanan have asked it in that case? That's one possibility. So, or it could be, you know what, maybe both cases were Lamata Miasara, and nonetheless, everybody agrees it's not a Karmelit, Velafka Karmelit Babia. And I'll tell you, there's another reason why these Brayotot are not arguing. Velokasha. Kan mi ba'od yom, kan mishachashicha. One is talking about where you did this while it was still day, and now you were a bad boy anyway. Why was I a bad boy? So somewhere I was a bad boy because it was during the time of Tosefet Shabbat. It's a little bit of a stretch. Others learn you were a bad bad boy, because you should have realized that Shabbat is coming. Now bring it back home. Come on. Put your hand back in. But playing these kind of games, I've sort of done a half hotzah, but, you know, I'll drop it after Shabbos. I mean, so then we don't like these games. So one, but nonetheless, we won't be gozer. So kan mi ba'od yom, kan mi shecha shecha. So if you did it mi ba'od yom, you didn't do anything wrong Erev Shabbos. So at that point, the extension wasn't wrong, so we don't force you to continue extending it. But look at Surah Rabban. But if you stuck out your hand after it was already Shabbos, which you shouldn't have done, into another Rishut. So, Mishach HaShikha Kansura Rabbana. Says, well, I mean, that's a weird kind of knas. Because what's going to happen now? How long is that hand going to be standing out there with the candies in it? An hour? 5 hours? 10 hours? At one point, he's going to drop those candies and say, the heck with it. I can't go on like this. But at that point, he's going to be over on Chil Shabbos. You're going to make him be Mechal Shabbos with your ridiculous knas. Do the Rabbana make a knas where it's going to cause a person to be Mechal Shabbos? I mean, if anything, Adarabba, no? Isn't it Ipcha Mistabra? Makes more sense to say that, Be'od Yom, if he had stuck his hand out from on Friday. We're over there, Isha Dilelo Atilide Chiyuv Chatat, where if he would throw it down, he would never, ever be able to be Mechal Shabbat, because he didn't do an Akira on Shabbat. Over there, if you want to say you were a bad boy, you should have brought it in before, fine. So give him a knas and let him suffer until he drops it. But Mishach HaShecha, I mean, if he didn't remember Mishach HaShecha, and then Isha Dilelo Atilide Chiyuv Chatat, if he had thrown it down, then he would be Chayav HaChatat. Would the Rabbana go ahead and give him a knas? They're low likness, Rabbana, obviously. Since we did not give that approach, which ultimately would mean, as Tosis points out, it would be an absolute ridiculous kind of thing to say, and therefore it would boil down to, okay, so you can't give him a knas. It's ridiculous to give a knas Erev Shabbos and not on Shabbos. I mean, that makes no sense at all. So since we don't view that as being a problem, that itself gives an answer to a question that had been asked by Rabbi Barabai. Because by Rabbi Barabai, a guy puts bread into an oven. Of course, when they put bread into ovens, it never went into the oven. It was stuck onto the side of the oven, as you can still see in the real pizza bakeries or the place where they do the Esh Tanurs, not in industrial fashion. You can't do this in industrial fashion. But the hand places, they pluck it onto the side and then pop it off, which is called Yiridat Apat. So the question is, he did it, and somebody said, you know, you jerk, it's Shabbos. Oh my God, I'll take it down. No, you know, I'll take it down. So the question is, do they allow him to take it down or not? Now, since you were willing to say that we would make a knas, that would bring a guy, so there's your answer. So here's your answer. Since nobody thinks that we should look at it the exact opposite way, apparently we don't have a problem with Rabbanim making a knas that makes it more likely to be Mechal Shabbos. Okay, so tifshot, no? So what's your problem? You're saying, so now we have an answer. Yeah, right, now you have an answer. You don't like it? Lump it. This is the answer I'm giving you. Or, Ibaitemer could be, no, Leolam lo tifshot. We don't mean to say this. There's a big difference. I mean, isn't there a difference between a case of a shogeg? Maybe, bishogeg lo kansur rabbanan. We're going to talk about what the case was of the pot tomorrow, on tomorrow's daf. So don't worry about how it ties into the words that we just said. So bishogeg lo kansur rabbanan. Therefore, we don't know in our case. I mean, it's different. Rabbi Mibarbai has nothing to do with this case at all. Because perhaps the reason we didn't even give him a knas has nothing to do with maybe he'll end up being Mechal Shabbos. It has to do with the fact that we don't give him a knas for somebody who does something by accident. We give a knas for somebody who does something wrong on purpose. And therefore, what does our sugya have to do with Rabbi Barabai's standing question? There could very well be that kan b'mezi kan b'shogeg. So b'shogeg lo kansur rabbanan, but maybe b'mezi kansur rabbanan. Or, you know what, maybe even b'yitei me'idiv ida b'shogeg. Maybe even if we're willing to say that we would give a knas, the question would be whether, and we would say we only are talking about generally a knas b'mezid, and of course, because the concept of knas, if somebody didn't mean to do something, doesn't seem to add up, but maybe the machloket over here would be, kansu shogeg otu mezid kum niflaget. The question over here would be whether if this guy does something by accident, his hand is sticking out there, are we going to make a knas v'shogeg? Because if we don't, then we will be unable to have the knas even by a mezid, because we have to define things. We're not. So mar sover kansu shogeg otu mezid, mar sover lo kansu shogeg otu mezid. Or, you know what? There's another explanation for the two brightot, and they still won't be argued. Could be everybody agrees. There's no knas. Okay, so if there's no knas, why does one say it's mutter and one says it's usser? I know, you don't understand. They're not saying mutter or usser to bring it back. The question is, everybody's agreed that we have a problem. That Shaila is, Can you undo that problem? Kan lo ota chatzer. You want to bring your hand back to where it was? That's the bond, the armor that said mutter. And everybody agrees to that. In other words, you want to undo what you were going to do? Fine. Okay, bring it back. But the guy says, okay, fine, but I don't want it in the house. I was throwing it out of the house. So, you know what? Let me drop it somewhere else. I'll drop it in the other guy's room. You know, not where I was going to drop it, in the Rishit Rabbim, but I'll just drop it to get away. Then, no. I don't want to drop it in the other guy's yard. He won't know. He won't, he's not here for Shabbos. And I'll get it out before he comes home. So let it sit in his, but I don't want to eat in my house. And over there, we know that there's a difference. It's very much like the case. Rava once asked Rav Nachman, suppose the guy's hand was full of perot, and he was otzia l'chutz. Is he allowed to bring it back l'otah chatzer that he pushed it out of? And Rav Nachman said to him, yes, he can bring it back. So then Rava said, okay, if he can bring it back, could he drop it somewhere else than his original intent, into another chatzer? Because if you take from one Rishat HaYachid to another Rishat HaYachid, that's not otzah. So, okay, fine, I won't try, I'll just drop it in the other guy's chatzer. How about that? Is that okay? Amalei Asur. So he asked, well, I understand what the difference is. Technically speaking, he's not doing Otsa in either case. So why are you disallowing one and allowing the other? Umayshna. So Rav Nachman said to him, listen here, my boy. Now that's a very common expression in the Gemara. It means after you measure me a bushel of salt. Now either that would mean you measure me. In other words, you want an answer? You do a little bit of work. I don't get free answers. Go sit and work. Let's see how serious you are. You know the book Holes or the movie Holes. That's the idea, you know, work. We'll see if you can work. And then I'll explain it to you. So it's just sort of a laughing, you know, you think you get your answer so easily. The other is that you can pour as much salt as you want on this and think that, you know, it'll be so salty you won't be able to tell the difference of the cases. Never. They don't taste the same at all. I don't care how much ketchup you pour on it. It's not going to be the same. It's, what kind of stupid question is that? Obviously, it's not the same. Because the difference would be, if you bring it back, nothing you wanted to do was accomplished. You didn't put it anywhere. You didn't get it out of the house. But if you put it somewhere else, at least a part of your intent, just get it out of my house. I can't take the stench, you know. Then it would be a Tavita Makshafta. We don't allow you to do it. A Tavita Makshafta. That much knas there is. Okay, so now we have dealt with the next part of the Mishnah, which created this scenario of hands in other Rishiyot than bodies, which of course is not necessary for the Iker expression of the Dinim of Otsah. We'll talk about a guy picked up something and walked out. That would be the classic Otsah. Again, the Mishnah has specifically chosen strange situations in order to raise as many possible issues in an attempt at information density, which is the yesod of Torah Shebaal Peh, it's an actual defined yesod. You must be malamid derech tzara to include as much information as possible in the shortest possible fashion. And so by doing this, he's already driven us crazy in what appeared to be a very simple statement.
Omar le Rav Matna Labaye Atmani Avin Tartis Reavan Vlataimek Shades Reavan. Now, Alokasha Vishlama Baba the Reisha, which is Potter Mutter, I understand, Lokatani. But Baba the Sefer, we've got 8 cases of Potter Avalosa Kasha. Hold on a minute, man. Miika Bakuli Shabbat Patur Mutar. I thought Omar Shmuk Opturi Shabbat Patur Avalosur Bamayani Tlat Potter Mutar. Say that Tzvit, say that Nachash, Bifis Mirsa. Ah, yeah, but that's Kitzchay Lishmo Beture, where you're active, Kavin Maaseh. Beture de lo Kavin Maaseh. There's lots of examples of that. And here's a great example, because I'm not going to say it's mutter to do something that's usher. It's just potter, and it's mutter in terms of Shabbos. Anyway, but getting back to my question now. Mikomakom Tartis Reavion? The answer is Beture de Atu Bolidechi of Chatat Kachashiv. De lo Atu Bolidechi of Chatat lo Kachashiv, which means either the ones who did the Akira, or it means the ones who moved their hands full across the boundary, or it means the ones who started off even with an empty hand by putting it into the other Rishut, or it means the ones who did the Hanachot. And those are only 4 out of the 8 cases. Shneyem Peturim, why? Va'aytavidam alacham bibinayu. Tanya Rebbe Omer Miyam Arts Ba'asotah. Aoset kula loha aoset miktata yachid viasaota chayav shnayim viasaota peturin it manami omer pchia baragamda nizreka mipicha buravi amru viasaota yachid she asa chayav shnayim she asa uha peturin Bomine Rav Mirebi. Hitinoch Avero Klino Mashkin Votinochut Mao. Akirat Gufok, Akirat Hefetz Mimakodomi. From the beginning of Machayev, Odumalo. Omle Chayav, Veno Domel Yado. My time, Yado lo Nayach. Gufo is Nayach. And some of the gears say Yado Batar Gufo Grira. Omele Rubchiel Rav Bar Pachte, Loa Mina Lakaki Kar Rebbe by Mesechta, Lotushaila by Mesechta Achrita. Dilma Lava Daite? Because if it wouldn't be that Rebbe is a Gavar Rabba Avi Kisifte, Meshanel Hashinu Lav Shinu, it's a good thing, Ashtam Yashapin Meshanel Ha. The Tanya Hatun, Ochlin, Omashkimi Bod, Yom Vatsyana Chutz, Meshecha Shecha Chayav, Lefi, Sheinu Domele Yato. Rabbi, Pshitili Yado Shel Adam, Ein Alokar Shuta Rabim, Velokar Shuta Yachid. It's clearly not a Rishut HaRabim, Miyad HaDani. It's clearly not a Rishut HaYachid, Miyad HaBal HaBayit. Boy, Abaya, what about Yadot Shel Adam to be called a Carmelite? Mi Kansur Rabban HaLadur HaGabei Olo. Tashmai Tai Adom Elaya Peirot, Votziya Lachutz, Toni Chada Asur Lachzira, V'Toni Yidach Mutar Lachzira. So my love, welcome if you get. Mar Sover Ke Carmelite Damio, Mar Sover Lach Ke Carmelite Damio. Not necessarily. The Kuli Amaka Karbali Dhamma Belokasha Kanla Mata Measara, where you're in the Avir of the Rishut HaRabim, and therefore we're Kenes, and Kanla Mala Measara, where essentially you're in a Mokam Tur. Vibayte Meida Vidila Mata Measara. And it's not because your hand is a Carmelite, it's because you did something wrong, and therefore the case where there were Kenes is Mishecha Shecha, the case where it's Butters Mibaod Yom, that's all. So Mibaod Yom Lo Kansur Rabbanan Mishecha Shecha Kansur Rabbanan. Wait, I mean, you could look at it out of Rabbi. If I'm starving, maybe Od Yom Yishadi Leilati Ledechi of Chatas. Over there, I can tolerate the Knas, but Mishecha Shecha, where Yishadi Leilati Ledechi of Chatas, they shouldn't make a Knas. Umin Aloka Meshanin Anachi Tivshat Rabbi Barabai, because that's exactly what Rabbi Barabai wanted to know. Did the Rabbanan give a Knas where it could actually lead to Chilul Shabbat? So he dvik pat betanur, he tiro lo liradota kodem sheva ledechi of Chatas, or lo itiro. So, if nobody thinks that I'm right, then that's a proof to lo itiro. Okay, so you got a problem with that? Hello, Kasha, so if it's sure, you're right. That's right. Nobody thinks it's an intelligent alternative. Okay? Or, maybe the difference between the two brightot is not what we saw. Maybe the difference was kan b'shogei, kan b'meizid. So if it's b'shogei, lo kansur rabban, if it's b'meizid, yes, kansur rabban. Oh, you know what? Maybe both are b'shogei. And the question is whether we do a kanas b'shogei because of meizid. Oto meizid kamifkei. Ma'ar server kansur shogei, oto meizid, ma'ar server lo kansur shogei, oto meizid. Well, you know what? It could be that the two brightot are not arguing because they're discussing different questions. Le'olam lo kansur, and there's b'chlal not a kanas in any of these cases. Lo kasha. Kan lo tachat. There the question is bringing it back. Where over there you're going to accomplish what you set out to do. We don't allow you to have that type of pleasure from doing things wrong. And what about lachzira lachatzer acheret mao? Amalei asur umayshna lachitechol alakur demilcha, for heaven's sakes. Atem loy davina makshavto. Hachay davina makshavto.
So, good morning to all on day 11. This is Shabbat. Talking to some of you. We're here in the second of Shabbat. Sorry.
Yes.
Shabbat. You too.
Good Shabbat, everyone.
Today is Daf Gimel. We're holding on Daf Beis on the base on the bottom. So, to review briefly the structure of our Mishnah, which we'll just keep in mind today in order to understand the discussion. Basically, the Mishnah was arranged in two separate sections, each one which has discussion of the Baal Bayit and the discussion of an Onan. The introduction of the Mishnah is that we have two cases which equal really four for both whatever, Bifnim and Bechutz. Okay. Our assumption was that the Bifnim and Bechutz, according to Rashi, is talking about somebody who's Omeid Bifnim, somebody who's Omeid Bechutz, and the events take place. And so we broke the Mishnah down, therefore, because really obviously if we have two sets of two cases, each of one consisting of two examples, we end up with 16 total cases here, because there's two participants. But we only talk for some reason about a total of eight, and that's what we need to discuss today. Why is that true? So the first two cases where the Oni, the person, again, Oni is a shortcut for somebody who's standing in Rishus Sarabi, and the Balabayat is a shortcut for somebody who's standing in Bifnim. And so the cases that we had were the two cases cases for each is where each one of them does a yitziyah and a hachnasa. So that the oni's hachnasa, which begins the Mishnah, is where he takes his whole hand and puts it into the rishos of the Baal HaBayit and drops what he's holding into the hand of the Baal HaBayit. So he did the entire thing. The case of the hotza'a that the oni did is when he takes something out of the hand of the Baal HaBayit, pulls his hand out, and then he does the hanacha when he stops, currently, in his own rishos. So in each one of these cases, he did a full akirah, hotza'a, and a hanacha, the three components. Now, in that case, if we think about it, there's obviously another participant, although it's completely passive participant. And those are an additional two cases that are part of the 16 possibilities in the Mishnah. The Baal HaBayit has been sitting there like a shelf. He's holding something in his hand. He doesn't move. The oni either takes it out of his hand or will deposit something into his empty hand, depending on whether he's doing hachnasa or hotza. In the inverse case, we also have a passive participant. The inverse case of the Baal HaBayit takes something which is in his own hand, deposits it in the hand of the oni. Again, the oni is just standing there, things would be passive. Or he removes something from the hand of the oni being completely passive, and he now takes it into his rishus, hotza and hachnasa. So we have really eight things to discuss right there. We only talk about, for some reason, four of them. Currently, because passivity doesn't interest us. We see that as a ma'aseh itzavah b'yom. We're talking about people who do something, not people who happen to be there. We're not discussing their lack of participation in the malacha. Okay, but then when we get to the next stage, where we're talking about where there were actually two participants in each one of the malachas, and again, we start with the yoni. He's standing outside, puts his hand into the other rishos, but instead of depositing the contents of his hand into the open hand of the Baal HaBayit removes it from his hand. And the other case in which in the Reisha the Oni removes something from the hand of the Baal HaBayit, in this case, he holds his hand in the Rishos of the Baal HaBayit, deposits something in the hands of the Oni, and then the Oni removes it. Now there, again, the Mishnah seems to be presenting the Shtayim Shein Arba for the Oni, because the Oni in the two cases there, Hotza v'Hachnasa, hasn't completed the entire Malacha. In one of the cases, he was not doing really the Akira, because the Baal HaBayit sucked it into his hand. In the other case, he was not doing the Hanocha, because the Baal HaBayit removed it from his hand. But there's two cases right there for the non-chayav participant as well that we don't talk about. Because we can't say he's passive. He certainly isn't passive. The Baal HaBayit in both of those cases was active. Either removed it from the hand of the oni or deposited it from the hand of the oni. So right there we already have an additional four cases. So we should have, before continuing any further, we have two cases now, an additional two cases for an oni, for Shayim Shein Arba, which is really what we have for the oni. The Mishnah's enumerating it. But the truth is, in the case of the oni, lie an additional two cases for the Baal HaBayit. He either deposited something in the hand of the oni or removed something from the hand of the oni. So we now already have our Shayim Shein Arba for the Baal HaBayit as well. When we add now the next case, which is the parallel case for the Baal HaBayit to the Baal HaBayit's case in the Reisha, namely, the Baal HaBayit now extends his hand and has the oni remove it, the contents from his hand, in the Rishat HaRavim. Or, when we have the Baal HaBayit now, who is going to be taking what somebody else puts in his hand, he'll remove it from the rishus of the oni. In both of those cases, the oni was also active. Not only the Baal HaBayit. So the Baal HaBayit's two additional cases now actually equal six cases for the Baal HaBayit, because we had two in the case of the oni. In the second case of the oni. Let's iconize, please. Just put a picture in your mind. We have oni, Baal HaBayit, oni, Baal HaBayit. The first two, oni, Baal HaBayit, is the other participant was completely passive. Okay? So the oni did 2x, the Baal HaBayit did 2x. Inverted, of course. In one it's hachnasa hotza, and the other it's hotza hachnasa. That's your first icon. We can effectively ignore the additional two cases which are on this side of the page and this side of the page, as it say the Baal HaBayit and the oni, because they're completely passive. Now let's move on to your next icon. Again, oni, Baal HaBayit. In both of those cases, the oni does not do the whole thing, and the Baal HaBayit does not do the whole thing. Which by definition means somebody else was active in both of these two cases. Now we're counting, as I'm pointing out, in the first case, which is the third case of the mission, the first case of the second set in the Mishnah, which is the case of the oni. We're counting two additional events for an oni, apparently. The oni now has put his full hand into the rishus of the Baal HaBayit, but he doesn't deposit it, the Baal HaBayit now. The second case is that the oni puts his empty hand into the rishus of the Baal HaBayit. Baal HaBayit deposits something into his hand, the oni removes it. It would appear that those are the two cases that we're counting for the oni from the simple structure of the Mishnah. After all, the first case of oni we counted the 2x that the oni did. So in the second case, we should be counting the 2x that the oni did. Meaning, he stuck his hand in full, or he stuck his hand in empty, but pulled his hand out full, right? Those are the two cases. Why are we ignoring what the Baal HaBayit did in those two cases? He was exceedingly active. He either deposited it, doing the Akira, or he did the Hanukkah by removing what was in the hand. Continuing on to the fourth case of the mission. Fine, so then that's four cases right there. Shlaim Shein Arba, Shlaim Shein Arba. Exactly. Shlaim Paturim. That's precisely the idea. So you already have now your eight cases. When we add now the fourth case of the Mishnah, which is the case of the Baal HaBayit, who's doing the same thing, an empty hand out or a full hand out, both of them are active. That already gives us another four cases. So instead of eight, we have 12, even if we want to ignore the two alternatives in the ratio where we have two passive participants of four cases. Holding your hand in a Rishus HaYotin and having somebody deposit in or remove from it. Holding your hand in a Rishus HaRabim and having somebody remove from it and deposit into it, correct? So ignore those cases. So take out four out of the 16 cases. You're left with still four cases of Chiyav, eight cases of Ptur. How are you going to distinguish between the eight cases of Ptur to make them now only four cases? Well, that's what you're claiming. You're saying Shem Shein Arba. You set up a Mishnah, and then in the way in which you structure a Mishnah, you give us not a clue as to where you get your numbers. And it's a crazy way to set up a Mishnah. You set up a Mishnah, you say Shem Shein Arba Bafnim, Shem Shein Arba Bafut. Then you offer us 16 cases, and we don't know which of the cases you mean. Where are the Shem Shein Arba cases? So again, the first two Bavas, which are the two subsections of the first part of the Mishnah, it's easy to figure out why over there we would only count two of the cases, because they're drastically different. Somebody's doing absolutely nothing in each one of those cases, and somebody's doing absolutely everything in each of those two cases. So out of the first eight cases, I can derive four. But I have a much more difficult time of understanding the last cases, the last eight cases that we have over here. How do I take out of those eight only four? Now, there's a lot of ways that I can parse those cases, right? I can say, okay, maybe only the person who began his movement of his hand. He's the one that we're referring to. For some reason, we won't talk about the other guy. So one way of parsing it, look at the guy who's doing the act, meaning the movement of the hand. Who's doing the hand movement? Maybe we like not hand movements, initial hand movements. Maybe we like the hutzah part. Where, in whose hand was the chepetz at the point that was crossing the boundary between Rishut HaRabim and Rishut HaYachid? Which is more psychological than anything else, because there's nothing particularly effective about it in terms of the chiyuv. A third way, correct? Hotzar is not particularly nogea, the movement of the object, any more than it is the akir na'anok of the object.
But it is crossing from one to two.
Who cares? Well, that's a prejudice that you have, right? No. Right, so yes, it is. It's absolutely a prejudice. Yeah, well, you're used to thinking about, in your human terms, you're used to thinking about Hotzar.
No, but that's when it makes sense.
No, absolutely not. You are not chayav when you cross the boundary. Not chayav in the least. You cross boundaries all day long, all day long, walking through everybody's yard, out into the street beyond it, into the next guy's yard, and it should not be chayav once. So clearly, Hotzar has nothing to do with moving a chayav from one region to another. In each case, you need a separate akir na'anokah. It's just a prejudice that you have as a child. You're not supposed to be carrying something. And that means I can't walk out. You're fine, it's a prejudice. But in terms of the structure of a Mishnah, why parse the Mishnah that way? Another way to parse the Mishnah would be to say only the individual that could have completed the act and been chayav is listed as important. So whoever did the akira in that case would be important. It's a little bit strange, because, I mean, when you're doing an akira and not moving your hand, you're basically chewing the stick of gum. I mean, who cares? What is he saying? I picked up something and put it in somebody's hand. Thank you. I mean, yes. What else interesting did you do today? Read any good books? Why would I want to put that in the Mishnah? As the case that's put. So in each one of these parsings, we have some kind of problem in looking at the structure of the Mishnah. So you can see that the Tana has really gone out of his way to make life tough. He's forcing us to consider each one of the different variables here. So he makes it easy for us in the first four cases. We can come to an easy conclusion. Which four out of the eight? And then he makes it very difficult in the last eight cases to figure out what four he's talking about. Okay. Now let's take a look at that in the Gemara and see how the Gemara puts it. Amalei Rav Matan Labai. Hatzmani Hagyan? I don't know. I mean, the Tana claims that's eight, but when I count, I get 12. Tagisrei Hagyan, I see 12 cases. Set up by a Tim, I don't understand. How do you see 12 cases? I mean, last time I counted, there were 16 cases. You obviously have already figured out a way in which you're defining which cases to include, aren't you? So by the time, if you're bothered by that problem, and you want to consider the other participants in the act besides the one that we're referring to, don't we have 16 cases? Shitzrei Hagyan. Amalei Rav Matan said, well, obviously, that doesn't bother me. In other words, in the first Bavas, which is the first section of the Mishnah, that's two subsections, of Ani Balabaya. So, Akashi, Bishon, the Bava duration, that Bava that includes the Ani and the Balabaya. I mean, obviously, Potter Umutar Lokatar. I have no interest in considering a case where somebody is sitting there passively. I mean, it's not just that he's patur, it's that, you know, he's mutar. What is he doing? He's holding his hand. I mean, what are you supposed to say? You're not allowed to hold something in your hand on Shabbat. I mean, obviously, he's mutar, so that's not part of the Mishnah at all, is it? That's what it says. I mean, isn't it? If somebody is using your hand as an act of Chilul Shabbat, isn't that at least, maybe it would be Lifnei Iver, assuming there'd be no other way you could put something down, which is called technically Trei Avi Denahar. You have to do people who have a Nazir, classic case of Nazir on one side of a river, and you're on the other side, and the only grapes on the side are right there, and you hand him the grapes. There'd be no way you'd get the grapes without your handing him, so then it's Lifnei Iver. If you could get the grapes anyway, it's not Lifnei Iver, but it's certainly called Nisayeli Degmar Avera. You seem to be supporting him. After all, you're sitting on the same table with the conservatives. You don't want to do that. What do you do about that? Okay, so Tosfos says, we're talking about a goy. Who's to say who the other guy was? So why should we? In other words, he's basically irrelevant. He's doing a Maisis Babi Alma. The Mishnah is not coming to teach us Dinim of Mikveiver and Mishayev de Paravera or joining the ACLU or whatever it is. The Mishnah is coming to discuss the Dinim of Shabbos. As far as the Dinim of Shabbos is concerned, let us effectively create a test tube situation in which this guy is not part of the picture. That I can understand myself.
The doctor really pulls them together.
Yes, I suppose we'll have to say.
Because Lugavi Tzedaka, Shabbos is too, but Tzedaka can only have it.
But it doesn't say anything about Tzedaka. It might have been, weapons. We might be talking about bullets.
Yes.
So, that doesn't bother me, says Rav Masih Babaya, but what does bother me is the last case. Well, wait a minute. Did you say that again? Did you say that the case of Shnehan Baturim actually means Fatur Umutzer? I thought the rule is that the word Fatur, when it comes to Chod Shabbat, is a very definite echo. This is an aside. Let's just examine this aside for a moment. The Gemara says, wait a second. Your semantics are troubling me. If Kulei Shabbos Potter Umutzer, there's such a thing as, quote, Fatur, unquote, which equals Mutar when it comes to Shabbat. The Omar Shmuel, Kol Turei de Shabbat, Fatur Avalasu. Anytime the word Fatur is used in Shabbat, it has the technical meaning of being an Isur de Rabbanan, except for three cases where it uses the word patur and where it actually means you can go right ahead and do it. Bar mehanitzlat de patur umutar. The case of Tzedat Tzvi. The case of Tzedat Tzvi is where a guy sits down on the door of his house after a deer has wandered in. Now he's chayav if he fills up the entire door, because that's the act of Tzedat. He's not trapped to be. You sit down in front of this guy in such a way that you also block the door, but the door is already blocked. The Tzvi is already trapped. If the other guy, the first guy, now gets up and you remain where you are, it says you're patur. Well, then you're patur. I mean, you didn't do anything. You're completely mutar. So that case means mutar, even though it says patur. The other case is Tzedat Nachash, where you're worried about getting bitten by a snake, and you trap the snake, but you have no interest in the snake. You're just trying to get him away from you, which is, you know, preserve the Pope and keep him safely away from us, kind of thing. Because I have no interest in preserving the Pope for him, but I do, or in this case, it's being Tzedat Nachash, but I just want to keep him away. This is called Melachash Enatsu Chalabufa, because the purpose of Tzedat is, the classic purpose of Tzedat is to have what it was that I was on. And therefore, even though it says patur, and normally even a malachash enetzer chalagufa, you were asur, but where it comes here to avoid a snake bite, the Rabbanan did not asur at all to shro, and it's patur mutar. And the third case is mefis mursa, somebody has a painful blister, and he makes a hole to remove the lymph from the blister, and in that case, he's, even though normally he would be not allowed to do that, even though it's enetzer chalagufa, just wants to get rid of the liquid, but in this case, mutar, because it's painful, so they didn't even ask. But that means that all other cases, such as the case of our Mishnah, where it says patur, it's got to mean that it's a sermon of Rabbanan. And you're claiming, Rav Masna, that you're not troubled by the eight cases in the Resha, that out of eight we should have only four, because we're not interested in the case of the guy who's mut. No, said Rav Masna. I mean, like, it's a good Turi de Gavi de Maise, Turi de Gavi de Maise, Ketuva. This now ends our aside here, okay? This has been a tangential semantica. Shmuel was only talking about somebody who does something where you can discuss if he's potter to do it, he's mutter to do it. If he doesn't do anything, there's lots of cases where somebody doesn't do anything, which is mutter. Now, this is actually a little problematic because the case of the Tzati is passive, but that we'll talk about when we get to Mosna. It's not really very important to us. Getting back now to our question. Rav Masna says to Abai, I'm still troubled by the fact as well. There's not, you're about 16, but there certainly isn't 8. It's 12. Well, on that answer, the Tana of the Mishnah is interested in discussing those tiyuvim, those tiyuvim drabonim, those tiyuvim drabonim, in which the iser is not just participation, but participation that is liable to lead to the oraita. And what does that mean? That doesn't help us all that much. Rashi understands that what it means is that the individual who begins, does the Masa Akira, whether he moved his hand out of the Rishut or he didn't move his hand out of the Rishut, he is the one that, if he continues doing what he's doing, he is then going to be completing the Malacha. So a person who moves his hand, even if he now moves it into the hand of someone who's going to pull it out of Rishut Sayok into Rishut Ras, the Balabai deposits it in the hand of the Ani. Being as, he might have decided on his own, you know what, instead of giving it to this guy, why don't I just take it out myself? So then he would have been fine. Those are the cases that we list. Another way of looking at it, which Rashi brings from his own Rabbein, is that the one who begins the malacha by moving his hand, is who we're talking about. So even though my initial hand movement was with an empty hand, put my hand in the Rishus of Alabai, there's nothing in it. I'm not doing anything. Somebody now puts something into my hand. But I'm chayav because I began the act, which ultimately turns out to be the melacha, which is rather difficult as well, because I didn't do anything when I move an empty hand into someone. Why does that have to do with the melacha? The fact that it can end up turning into a different situation, which would be a melacha. The third possibility, which actually the Rosh seems to understand is the meaning of Rashi's Rabbeinu, even though it doesn't seem that way, is that we're talking about, that we would be talking about this, how the Rosh actually learns it. So this brings possibilities like this, that the one who is moving his hand out of one Rosh to another, so whether he's moving it with something already in it, and he did the Akira, or whether he is removing it after somebody put something in it, and he's going to do the Hanocha. But the point is that two-thirds of the Malacha, so to speak, the whole active and central element of the Hutzah was done by that individual. He held the Chepetz at the time that it was going from one Rosh to another, and had achieved part of that, either through taking it out or setting it down. So it wasn't just that it was in the air, he was really involved in moving it from one Rosh to another. The three possibilities here, on how to understand the four cases out of the eight possible cases that are mentioned in the second part of the Mishnah. So, P'turei da'ati bu ledechi uf'chatat k'chashiv, de'lo ati bu ledechi uf'chatat lo k'chashiv. But now, getting back to the cases, it does say, shnehem p'turim. How could they both be p'turim? The bottom line is that between the two of them, they accomplished the melacha Shabbat, did they not? So why wouldn't we look at that? There's two ways of understanding this. Why wouldn't we look at that as a joint activity, in which case they should both be chayev from melacha Shabbat? The Tosis doesn't like that approach. Who cares? So what if the melacha was done between you? The Gemara's kasha would be meaningful only on the one who completes the melacha. Because in doing the hanacha, I have now transferred a chayev from rishus to rishus. For all intents and purposes, the way in which the initial part was done is to me irrelevant. What I want to do is put a chepetz in a new reshut where it wasn't before. So why shouldn't I view that as the melacha Shabbat? So somebody else managed to do the mechanical part of it for me. But now I'm the one who finalized the act as being an actual movement from one reshut to another. So why shouldn't I be chayav? Tanya Rebbe Omer, look at the pasuk. The pasuk that discusses the chiyav of echata. So over there it's talking about the nefesh hachat, techeta bishkaga. So first of all, it's referring to nefesh achat. We'll see there's really two different things that are involved here. Ba'as sota achat mitzvot Hashem. So that ba'as sota, we darshan, ba'as sot ota, meaning ha'oseh et kula, v'lo ha'oseh et mitzata. Only someone who does an entire melacha, not who achieves a melacha, is the one who will be chayav. Which implies that yachid v'yasa ota chayav, shnayim v'yasu ota piturim. Tosfos insists that this is basically a repetitive statement. In other words, when we're saying ha'oseh et kula, v'lo ha'oseh et mitzata, and Yachido Selta Hayab Shnayim Patur, those are not two separate limudim. In other words, you might think that I could separate those two ideas. Let's say I have myself and my friend together pick up something, together carry it out, and together set it up. That's Shnayim Shosim Uta Paturim. Each were Oses Kula. The other case would be, I pick it up entirely, hand it to my friend who sets it down entirely. So there might be a way to understand the Gemara, which is saying, Oset Kula V'loses Biktata, doing an Akira and not doing Anoch, doing Anoch and not doing Akira is not enough. The second one, Shnayim Yasu Uta Paturim, is where together two people do the entire act, but one of them could have done the act by himself. Okay, the truth is that you would be potter in both of those cases. However, Tosfos says we'll see later on that the Gemara seems to require a different source, the second one. And we can't learn that from Ba'as Sota, which is a focus on the Melacha, rather than on the number of people.
Does intention have anything to do with
it? Everything to do with it, but in this case the intention was throughout. We're assuming. In other words, what Richie is questioning is whether somebody else's Akira al-Manat to be Motzi, if I were to do a Hanakha, we wouldn't have had this possibility. If I were to do a Hanakha that was unaware or careless about the intent of getting it out of that Rishos, whether I would be Chayav. And the answer to that is certainly not. Malachat Makshevet Asrat Torah, that's not the point.
But if you were,
assumption is that if I were, I would nonetheless be Potter because of this new Halacha, that you can't have two participants in a Malacha. And furthermore, a Malacha is defined by its entirety, not by its achievement. There are two separate issues. The question is, do we learn them both out of this pasuk? Fine. So it turns out we don't learn them both out of this pasuk, and this is just a redundancy of language. Om Reb Chiya Bar Itmar Nami, we also have a ma'amar to the same effect. Om Reb Chiya Bar Gamda, Nizreka Mipi Chabura, basically out of the group research here. So we never, in a think tank, we don't tell you precisely who came up with the idea, but we did come up with this in the Rand Corporation. Namely, Ba'asota Yachid Sha'asa Chayav Shnayim Sha'asa'u Pituni. Ah, you like the Nizreka, do you? We've spoken about the Nizreka before. We just pointed out that Nizreka seems to refer to an emergent idea. In other words, when somebody is Horish, we tell something else. It means it can't be attributed. It's like when we say something, you find that Tesha Chanuyot, right? The Porash. If it's Bimekomo, Kokobuah, Mechkemechsal, Mechsal, it has to get out of the Plita, so to speak, Nizra Kamiki Chabura. So we look at the Chabura as now a Mele unit, which each individual is a participant, but it's the Chabura who sees. And in that sense, we talk about the Porash from them. We use the word Nizra Kam, because we can't trace it anything in particular. It's like trying to attribute a thought to a particular set of neurons in your brain. It's Nizra Kam, basically. When you're talking, we don't attribute it to any particular group of neurons, because we recognize it as an activity that emerged from it, has nothing to do with any neuron that is functioning.
Individual, everyone, they all immediately identify with it.
No, it's just that I can't say that I contributed more than you contributed. The basic idea of yours in our discussions of this issue, this is what worked out. We all understand that. It's not like the old days where somebody used to make a discovery, no? But that's always true when something suddenly emerges, isn't it? It's Malchut, basically. Blaming a Rav Mireb. Now we get on to the next question, which we mentioned when we were learning in the Mishnah, which is the strange relationship to the hand. There's this hand seems to be doing a lot of different things that are inconsistent. Because on the one hand, we view it as a place in which I can be miniach something, and yet on the other hand, I view it as a place in which something is not munach. The proof is that if I am the Baal HaBayit, and I put something down in the hand of the Ani, and now the Ani removes it from the Rishus of the Baal HaBayit, the Ani is potter. But if something in a hand is considered to be munach, then the Ani should be chayav. If the hand is an object that's in another rishus, a space within a space, then relative to the hand, if something is munach, then it should be munach in that rishus. If we view the hand as being in a rishus b'fnei atzmo, so then it shouldn't accomplish a hanachah when I put it into the hand of the Yoni, if I'm the Baal HaBayit, and yet it says that I'm chayav if I do that. So we need to explore the status of the hand. So that's the next case. Boy mine rav mirevi. Suppose somebody would put food or whatever on a person who was walking, and now that person continues and walks outside, and then he stops. Do we view the movement of his body from the Rishus? Now, if he was continuing to walk and hadn't stopped, then there was definitely no idea that was done, right? It has to be a moment that futaf is being stopped, it's in its place, munach, and now walking on. So now, that means that the only case that we could talk about is actually where I load him up and he stops, or he was up when I loaded him. That's for sure. But the question is, if he now starts moving, did he lift everything out of the Rishus when he started to move? Or was it I who did the Akira by putting it on his body? I mean, it would seem from the Mishnah that it is I. Because where it was his hand, and I put it in his hand, it says I was butter, but so was he, because he didn't do the Akira. So this should be the same, no? So I want to know, Akirat Gufo, moving his body from a state of rest, Akirat Chefetz Mimakovodom Yumifayev, would he be Chayev in exactly the same way as if he himself had lifted up that thing from the ground? Odiomolo. Or do we say that, no, it's the person who put the thing on him, who now will be the one who did the Akira. Of course, he won't be Chayev, because I completed it, but I won't be Chayev either. Omalei Chayav. Rebbe answered, Rav, he would be Chayev. And I know what you're thinking. Ein Adom LeYad. It's not the same as the case of the Yad in our Mishnah. My time, why is it not the same? Because Gufo Nayach, Yado Lo Nayach, his body is at rest. So even though it says in our Mishnah that if I put my hand, I'm an onion, I put my hand indoors, the Baal HaBayit now put something in my hand, it's the Baal HaBayit to do the Akira, not me. That's because the hand was not at rest in the Rishut of the Baal HaBayit. So if I simply would have moved my hand, I never removed what was in my hand from that Rishut, because it wasn't at rest in that Rishut. Now, had my hand been down on the ground in that Rishut, okay, my hand was resting on the ground. You now put something in my hand. Now I pick it up and remove it. Then, indeed, my Yad was Nayach. But my body is always Nayach on the ground. I mean, unless I'm, you know, doing some type of metaphysical something. Therefore, I'm hovering. But generally speaking, if I'm not practicing my Indian exercises, or if I'm not running or walking, I'm at rest. So if I'm at rest and you put something on my body, that thing is at rest as my body is on the ground. Okay, now, this is how Rashi learns. He stresses the concept of the relationship to the ground, which is one way of understanding the Gemara. There's another girsa here, which Rashi rejects. And he brings it, Mishnah Achrina, Yado Batar Gufo Grira. Your hand is always going to be removed from where it is by the fact that it's attached to your body. Because we cannot view your hand as being an entity unto itself. The fact that it's part of your body means it will never be effectively settled in a different rishus than your body. It has a tendency to follow you around. So in a case where your body is at rest and your hand is in the same rishus as your body, then whatever is in your hand is essentially attached to you and it therefore is at rest because you are. But a hand that is in now a circumstance in which it's a different space than your body can't be part of that space and isn't part of the space of your body either. And therefore, it's in nowhere land. So putting it in that hand cannot be considered a deposit into a different rishus. But by the same token, moving your hand couldn't be considered to be removal from the rishus in which it was, because it wasn't totally in that rishus. Now, as we mentioned yesterday, there exists a concept in terms of Shabbat, which is a non-rishus. Remember, we have Rava's explanation that the Shtayim Shenar, by the way, Rashi was learning Shtayim means the two rishuyot. By the way, Rava was learning the Shtayim means two chiyuvim through rishuyot. Not that it's mentioning the Shtayim, the number of rishuyot. But the way Rashi was learning the Shtayim is Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabim. There's actually Arba Rishuyot B'Shabbat. But in the Oraita, there's only two recognizable spaces. Rishut HaYachid, Rishut HaRabim. They are defined by actual spatial ideas. In other words, they need to be defined through a set of coordinates that are set aside by a concept called Mechitza. Okay. However, anything that is not so set aside is viewed as being in a non-space. And that's called a Makom Ptur. Makom Ptur means it's something that has no relevance to the idea of space at all as far as Shabbat is
concerned.
No, specifically, that's not the idea. That's what I'm trying to get across. It's a no-seis. In other words, it's the fact that Rishut needs to be well-defined that creates a Makom Ptur. It's not that Makom Ptur is a space, but it's allowed to be moved to as a no-man's land, or not allowed to be moved to if it's a Karmelit. That's not the idea. It simply is a no-space, as far as the Torah is concerned. It's not in a particularized space. Okay? So since Hotzal means the changing of spatial coordinates in a particular way, you don't change anything when you start or end in a Makom Ptur. That's the idea.
That sense, which is Rishut HaRabim, is not a change for sure.
So, and what about on the border between Rishut HaRabim?
We'll talk about that. Those are issues that are discussed in Feirushim later on in the Masechta. Whatever condition. But now, getting back to this question over here. Since that's the case, again, this is the other Gersa. It's not the Gersa that Rashi has, but the Gersa that Tosafot has. The idea over here is that your hand essentially boils down to a no space when it's not in the same place as your body. Since Yado Batar Gufo Gerira, there would be no way that you could be chayav by moving something that's in your hand from a different rishus, unless you actually picked it up out of that rishus. Because you cannot be oker something that is in your hand. Because by virtue of its being in your hand, it's no longer defined by the coordinates of the space in which it is. And that's the meaning of Yado Batar Gufo Gerira. Therefore, if somebody deposits something into your hand that's in another rishut, or you move something from your hand to another rishut, he's not transferring it into another rishut. Okay? That's how Tosus use it. And according to that, it may be that even if it's on the ground, it wouldn't make any nafkamina. Okay? But we'll see more about this later.
So, would that also be considered Kotor Avodah
Zarah? That we'll see. We're going to explore that today. Okay? So, Tosus doesn't like Rashi's pshat because he says, L'chor, it doesn't really matter. It's not the ground that's important. It's not the yad being close to the ground. It's not your feet being on the ground. That's not what we're looking at. We're looking where you are. Yeah. What? Yes, we'll see later on in a different sense. Yado Basar Gufo Gerira is no day a lot of other halachas, which is why Rashi just rejects it here, because it doesn't seem to be what the Gemara needs to discuss this one. Let's see later. Can we wait till we get there? Okay. Omar Lehi, but meanwhile, Reb Chiya objected to Rav's asking Rebbe this question. Why? Because they weren't learning Shabbat in the Beit HaMikdash at that time. So Omar Lehi, Reb Chiya L'Rav, Bar Pachti. Bar Pachti means the son of great people. Lo Amina L'Chaki Koi Rebbe behind the Sefer, Lo Tishayim in the Sefer. How many times have I told you that when Rebbe is learning one Sefer, you're not to ask him questions in a different Sefer? Yoma Rav Adaite, because it may simply not be on his mind, and therefore he might have given you some type of off-the-cuff answer that would have been inconsistent with the way that he would have seen it if his mind would have been on that Masechta. D'ilav d'Rabbi Gavra Rava Uksifte. If it wouldn't be that Rebbe is a very great man, you might have just now embarrassed him. Because he might have told you something which then he himself would have rejected. Would have told you something which wouldn't have stood up to a full investigation. You're lucky this time. He gave you a good answer, because I know that he's right, from a bright. Titania, Hayata Uno Chino Mashkim Livaod Yom. A person who was carrying something that he had picked up and put in his pocket before Shabbat began, and now he walks out of the house with it. Only, as Tosus explains, only when he had stopped moving before Shabbat began. Picked it up, stopped. Okay. Now it's Shabbat. He now walks out of the room, goes outside, and stops. He would be chayav. And the Braita puts in the words, because it's not like his hand. In other words, the Braita is directly addressing the issue in our Mishnah. Because that's basically what's done when the Ani removes his hand after the Balabait puts it into his hand, and nonetheless it says the Ani is patur. So why is this person chayav? Because it's not like his hand. So you have Rashi's approach to why it sounds like his hand. Tosfos' approach to why it sounds like his hand. Two gears solid. They're very close to each other. It's questionable whether there actually is a difference that Tosfos claims between the two pshatim, but that we'll get into later.
So the easiest way to think about it is the form of Akira.
It's not that that's the easiest way to think about it. That's precisely what it's addressing. That is Akira. His body is at rest, and when he moves, he's being okay with the faith that's along with his body. Yes, exactly. The Braita specifically addressed what you, Rav, had asked Rebbe, and what Rebbe told you was a paraphrase of the Braita.
He had a pack on his back in the house.
And stopped before Shabbat. Because if he had picked up the pack and continued walking, and as he's walking, and he's got a large house, as he's walking, Shabbos falls. That's exactly what I'm trying to explain. So if he had continued to walk, now Shabbos falls and walks out of his door, he would be potter. Because he didn't do an Akira on Shabbos. You have to do a whole Malach on Shabbos, right? So he would have had to have stopped and then started to move again on Shabbos. That's the Akira. That's what the issue is, not the original picking it up. So we need to create a case where the Akira consists of his movement now on Shabbos as an Akira, Utsa, and Hanoch. On Abaye. Now, Abaye wants to address the status of the hand itself. Is the hand itself an actual no space in terms of having no implications for transference on Shabbos? Or is the hand a Rabbanan space? Now, there's a concept which is called a Karmelit. A Karmelit is a non-space Midoraita, which the Rabbanan turn into a third type of space, which is differentiated both from Rishut HaRabim and from Rishut HaYachid. We will see, and this is very confusing, we will see, that there are other Rishuyot, which we relate to as a Karmelit, which actually may be Rishut HaYachid, D'oraisa, and the Rabbanan gave that dinim similar to a Karmelit in terms of there being Chomer like Rishut HaRab. For instance, in any Rishut HaYachid, I'm allowed to move as far as I want. In my house, I can move as far as I want with something and put it down again. In Rishut HaRabim, once I move four Amot from where I am, it's viewed as a different Rishut HaRabim. So each Rishut HaRabim, I'm prohibited in transferring from within Rishut HaRabim, from one set of coordinates to another. No, only if I stop. Well, I mean, there may be Isurim Drabonim in not stopping as well. We'll talk about it. It depends on the circumstances. There may be, if you started, then you can't move even if you intend not to stop. That's because we include that as well. The same way we include the Potter in the Mishnah is an Isur without doing Akira and Hanok. It's all an Isur Drabonim. That same Isur applies to Rishut HaRabim. You understand what I'm saying? But it's not a new Takana. It's that I give certain Rishuyos to Chumrah of Rishut HaRabim, even though they're Rishut HaYachid. That should not be confused with the Karmelit, which is neither Rishut HaYachid nor Rishut HaRabim, in which I answer movement both from it to Rishut HaRabim and to Rishut HaYachid. Okay? Now, Abaye wants to know, the Mishnah clearly has told us the hand is neither Rishut HaRabim nor Rishut HaYachid. That's obvious, because if the Baal HaBayit removes something from the hand of the Ani, he's patur. And if the Ani removes something from the hand of the Baal HaBayit in his Rishus, he's patur. Which means that the hand can't be Rishut HaRabim, or the Baal HaBayit would be chayav. And it can't be Rishut HaYachid, or the Ani would be chayav, because he's taking it out of Rishut HaYachid into Rishut HaRabim. So it's neither. But the question is it something else? Does it have a din of a Rishut Rabbanan? The difference would be, it wouldn't be Nogeya Baal HaBayit to the Ani, because they're not allowed to remove anyway, since it came from a different Rishut. The crazy difference would be for the owner of the hand. That's usually the person that is attached to the hand. So in that case, would he be allowed to bring his hand back into where it was? Or being as his hand is now turned into a different rishus, the moment it crosses into a different space, he's got to keep his hand out there for the rest of the day. That's the question. So that's what I want to know, says Abaye. Look, pshitali yadosh ladam ena lo krishut rabim, v'lo krishut hayachid. So it's obvious it's neither one of the diorayta rishut. Krishut rabim lo dam yami yadu de'ani. It's obviously not rishut rabim, or the Baal HaBayit would be chayiv taking it out of the rishus of the ani. It's not like rishut hayachid that I see clearly miyadu de Baal HaBayit. But my question is, boy Abaye, but what about yadosh ladam? Mau shetayaseh ki karmelit? Can his hand become a Karmelit? A lotion of forest-like areas, Khursha, in the Pasuk, we call Karmelit, Ya'aro v'Karmelo. So that type of thing, an open area, which is nonetheless Osir min Rabbanan, is your hand considered to be a Karmelit? Mikansua Rabbanan, implication would be, that if it were, that the Rabbanan would have then been kones you, li'ahadure l'gabe, from bringing it back to where you were. Now, if we use that word, kansua, as it appears here, it would only apply to a case where you started doing something bi'isur. So over here, that Ani never should have put his hand into the Rishut of the Baal HaBayit. The Baal HaBayit should never have put his hand into the Rishut of the Ani. And since he did, now the other guy was kind enough not to remove it from him. No, I will not do that malacha. Oh boy, what do I do now? So there, the Shailas, can I bring my hand back in? That's kasua. If it's even where you didn't start doing your bizur, then it would have said asua. Did they give it a different din? And then it would have nothing to do with whether I started doing it for the wrong reason. Tosfos says we should be going as asrua. It's only later on that we deal with the question of knas. So that's my question. Can I actually bring my hand back in? According to Rashi, where I started the yisur, according to Tosfos, under any event. Well, Tashma, let's bring a riot from the following brayta. A guy is in his house, it's full, he has a handful of fruit, and he puts his hand now outside the window. One brayta said, you cannot bring that hand back in. Good luck, buddy. And Tani, the other brayta says, you can bring your hand back in. My love, welcome if we apparently. This is a machloket anoim. Marsavarki karmeli damya, umarsavarki karmeli damya. And that's your answer, Abaye. No, that's not my answer. Over there, it's very possible. The cooling alma, the karmeli damya, the lokasha, kan lamata me'asara, kan lamala me'asara. The difference may be where the window is. Because you see, one of the interesting things about a Rishut HaRabim is that the notion of an open space, which is nonetheless well-defined, it seems to be a contradiction in terms, is only when it's close to a surface. So it has to be within 10 tefachim of a surface, then we can use the surface to provide coordinates in that space. But if it's in the middle of the air somewhere, it's back in a nowhere space. So once you're now 10 tefachim above the surface of the Rishut HaRabim, you are now in a nowhere space. So if I took my hand, put it out of the window, and my window was a second-story window, I didn't do anything wrong. I would have been allowed to put something into a no space. So there's no problem in that. So why in the world would my hand then be meaningfully somewhere else? According to Rashi's chat, I certainly didn't do anything wrong, because if I put it into a no space, I would have been allowed to do it lechatchila. According to Tosfos, we have to jiggle this a bit, because what's the difference whether it, if I define my hand as a karmelit, perhaps it could be a karmelit even in a no space. Now, so you would have to change the nature, the definition of a karmelit, that it itself needs to be within some space. Okay. So maybe that's the difference, and they're actually not arguing with each other at all. These two brides, they're talking about two different windows. One's talking about the first story window, and one's talking about the second story window. Or I can give you another answer. Maybe, indeed, both cases are talking about a first-story window, and both agree that it's not a karmelit, and the question is whether the Rabbanan ossered you from bringing your hand back in, not through a manipulation of the din of the hand space, but rather just to get your goat. If you did something wrong, meaning you stuck your hand out after Shabbat that had already begun. Because then if you indeed had dropped it, you would have been chayav. So over there they answer you for bringing it back in. You know, goodnik, you shouldn't have done that. Sit there with your hand out all day as far as we're concerned. Exactly, enjoy it. But mi ba'od yom, your hand was stuck out of the window. Mi ba'od yom, you didn't do anything wrong. So over there, lo kamsu rabbanan, and in that case, they did not give you any kind of knas. Not a knas, it's a knas for doing something wrong. You'll pay for it by leaving your hand out there. But it doesn't affect the halacha of changing your hand into a karmelit or not. Yeah. Says the Gemara, wait a minute, I don't know, but you couldn't stop. I mean, wait a minute. If we're going to talk about a difference between you did it in the day or you did it at night, it makes much more sense, I said, that if you did it in the daytime, we'll force you to leave your hand out there, because even if you end up dropping the payrods and you can't hold them for so long, you won't be fired. Mashainkin, if we tell you to hold your hand out there holding those perot when you did it for Yisur, then if you drop the perot, you'll be chayev. We don't want to put you in a position in which you will have ended up doing a malacha lotzah, do we? So why don't we look at it the other way, which is Tosfos says, which would have then immediately popped out of existence because it would have been a joke. In other words, what we're really saying is the whole thing is absurd. Obviously, we can't be knas you for doing nothing wrong. But the only way to look at this is to do it bedavka the other way. So we're certainly not going to do it this way. Interesting. Look, if you want to talk about a knas, it makes much more sense to give the guy a knas in a way that he can't, won't do an iser. Not where the knas itself will cause him to do chilul Shabbat. No? And that's what you're doing. You're causing him now to be mechalel Shabbat, because he's going to let go of these fruit, likely it is. Who's got a grip that's going to last the next 24 hours? He's going to tire, drop the fruit, and then bring his hand in. So if he drops the fruit, he's going to be mechalel Shabbat. So you should have done it the other way around. Which is, if you stuck your hand out during the day, you should have been smart enough to bring it back before Shabbat. Now you're going to have to pay by leaving it there the whole day. Right?
How does that help?
Exactly. So what it means is we're reducing the whole thing to a joke. So it's ridiculous. Because why don't you recognize that you've created an absurd situation over here? The real thing that you ought to do, you can't do. So as a substitute, you're doing something that you shouldn't do. What does that mean? Okay, so since that is not even an issue in the Beit HaMidrash, nobody is bothered by it. It's clear that indeed we do not take into consideration the possible implications of Chilul Shabbat that may come as a result of a takona min rabbanan. In other words, the Rabbanan can create situations, Barnei Adir, the Rabbanan can create situations in which, as a result of their supposed concern to prevent people from coming to Chilul Shabbat, under certain circumstances, it will cause people to come to Chilul Shabbat. Can you hear me?
What is the expression?
Eis lazen zayin? No, no. In other words, it's just simply that we take into consideration the local impact of the gzeirah, the fact that ultimately this could lead to problems, is not what we need to take into consideration. So, and that itself is a solution to a question that was asked by Rabbi Barabai. Since nobody is bothered by that inconsistency, and try to do it in the other direction, we should therefore conclude that the solution to Rabbi Barabai's question, to wit, the boy Rabbi Barabai, he big pot betanur. Here's an interesting thing. The Rabbanan said, you're not allowed to take bread off of the edge, you know, the way that they used to bake bread, or they break the, what do they call that?
Ishtanur.
Where they break it up against the edge of an oven. And you've got to take it off. There's this little wooden thing that you poke it off, and it pops into your shovel like a fair. You take it out. Now, that's not a malacha. However, the Rabbanan asked it. It's more of a skill. It's called a chokhmah, not a malacha. That's a skill. The Rabbanan asked it. On Shabbos. Rabbanan asked it. So now, what about a case where a guy... They answered removing it on Shabbos. It was baked before, baked after. We're going to ask this question. Suppose a guy not realizing it was Shabbos puts the, or realizing, whatever the case may be, we'll talk about that tomorrow. He sticks his bread on, it starts to bake on Shabbos. Somebody comes along and says, what's the matter with you on Shabbos? Oh my God, I'll take it down before it bakes. No, you can't take it down. You're going to have to let yourself be killed. Because after all, I mean, I wanted to say you can't take it off the edge of the tanur. Well, we'll see. That's what we'll talk about tomorrow. So the question is, did the Rabbanan say you can't take it off, even if the guy's going to be Mechal Shabbos because I said he can't take it off? Or in such a case, would they say, well, certainly if you need to take it off to avoid Chilul Shabbos, we're not going to answer something and claim it's going to bring you to Chilul Shabbos. That would be ridiculous. That was Rabbi Barabai's question. It appears from here that we don't care about the implications of the possibility of actually causing Chilul Shabbos under certain circumstances because of our Takana. The Takana cannot stand. So his question was, he did talk to Tanur on Shabbat. And now he wants to take it down before he's chayav a chatat. So he tiru lo lirdota, call him shiavu l'dekiyuf chatat, or lo he tiru. Bring a proof from here, tiksha, to lo he tiru. If they didn't conclude this in the Beit HaMidrash, nobody even talked about the question of having put your hand out before Shabbat, we're ready to say we make a kenas and we put your hand out after Shabbat, apparently we don't care. Okay, fine, so you're right. Hello, Kasha, what's bothering you? So, tiksha, fine. Then that's the answer, okay? I mean, nobody said his question has to stand forever. Or, and the truth is, it's not really exactly the same. The difference is whether you do it on purpose or not. Could be the shogeg. Welcome to a rabbanan. The question of Rabbi was if a guy didn't know it was Shabbos and he put it there. So there, they weren't konesim maybe because he did it b'shogeg. But the question over here is, in a case where a guy stuck his hand out, holding his pears b'mezid, and that's what we say katsura rabbanan, maybe that's different. You can't prove it from our case. Or, maybe there's another reason you can't prove it. Maybe both of them b'shogeg. And the question is a different question. The kansu shogeg atu mezid kamifogeg. Maybe we're dealing with the issue of whether a knas exists when done b'shogeg, since it would exist when done b'mezid. But that doesn't necessarily imply that where the knas would exist, that it wouldn't apply even in cases of chilul Shabbat. So mar savar kansu shogeg atu mezid. Mar savar lo kansu shogeg atu mezid. Maybe that's the machlokus in the braita. Or, maybe actually there's no knas at all of shogeg atu mezid. I'll give you a completely different explanation of the issue between the two brachot. The difference in the two brachot is not where the window was, not whether it was done in the day or after the nightfall, not whether it was done b'shogeg or done b'mezid. It's very simple. The question was, can you bring your hand back? No. Can you bring your hand in? Yes. Meaning, stick it into some other window, into another place, where it wasn't where you intended to put it. So in other words, we don't want you to put it where it was. That's the question. Can you bring your hand back to the same place where it was? Can I put it somewhere else? No, you can't. Even though it's not going from Rishut Rabbi to Rishut Rabbi. Umayshna, what's the difference? What's the difference whether I deposit it on one side of the fence, which is in somebody else's house, or I deposit it on the other side of the fence, which is my house? Mayshna. What do you mean, Mayshna? If you take a look where the milcha, and you finish pouring me out a half a ton of salt, I'll tell you. I can just tell you for free. I mean, it's worth something. Do a little bit of work, and then I'll tell you. You guys sit there, fall asleep, and then one answers. Why should you get answers? Prove that it makes a difference. That's one approach. The other approach is, man, you could pour salt on this all day long, and it would never be the same. It's no comparison. The difference is, Hatam Le Davina Machavto, Hatai Davina Machavto. We don't let you do the thing that you wanted to do. Namely, you wanted to remove it from this chutz, so that was part of what you wanted to do. That you ain't gonna do, even if it's to somewhere else, even if it's to a different chutz or not to Rishus Haram. But you can bring it back to where it was and get nothing at all achieved. That yes. Okay, so I'm a man, because the next time we're worried, you'll throw it into Rishus Haram, we're gonna let you do it into another chutz. And maybe that's what they're talking about. They're not talking about a transfer Rishus Haram, Rishus Yachid. They don't want you to be able to transfer something, even though it's a Rabbanan, because they don't want you coming to the Afiyah B'Rai.